From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Good Friday afternoon to you all. I am Sarah Perry, your host on this, the 15th of May, 2020. On this Friday edition of Washington Watch, a number of military chaplains are under attack by an activist group that claims to prevent constitutional infringements on religious liberty in the U.S. Armed Forces. Their offense? Sharing Christian resources with their parishioners in a non-traditional way, dictated by the COVID-19 pandemic. U.S. Representative Doug Collins of Georgia has had enough, and he joins me to discuss the letter that he sent with 19 other Republican colleagues in the House to Secretary of Defense Mark Esper yesterday morning, complaining of multiple unfounded complaints that prey on military chaplains. He'll discuss that and his concerns with the bloated House Democrat Heroes Act. In my second block, I'll have Mike Donnelly, who is the Center Director of Global Outreach for HSLDA, will discuss a new survey with many parents up close and personal, as we are with their kids' education during the pandemic. Recent polling indicates that 40% of us are more likely to consider homeschooling or online learning after the pandemic ends. At the bottom of the hour, David Benham, president of the nonprofit charity Cities for Life, will talk with me about North Carolina's response to the pandemic, the effort to reopen churches there, and a special event this weekend held by Trail Life USA to encourage and entertain lockdown-weary parents. And in my last block, we'll talk about a topic I've been anxious to discuss. The 1619 Project, a product of the New York Times, has won a Pulitzer Prize recently, but critics say it's far from perfect. Revealed to be a massive recharacterization of the founding of America, it has historians everywhere scratching their heads. One critic is Mike Gonzalez, senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation and the author of the upcoming book, The Plot to Change America: How Identity Politics is Dividing the Land of the Free. He'll join me to discuss how the 1619 Project will boost socialist education in schools. As a reminder, you can find information on today's program on TonyPerkins.com, the website for today's broadcast. You can also find us on the Stand Firm app. If you go to the Apple Play Store or the Google Play Store, if you've got the app already, make sure that you go into your respective stores and update it. It's been rebuilt from the ground up and is ready to re-download. Again, that's the Stand Firm app, or follow the link on TonyPerkins.com. Well, in April, U.S. Army Colonel Woon Kim, garrison chaplain at Camp Humphreys in South Korea, sent a PDF of Christian author John Piper's book, Coronavirus and Christ, to serve as an encouragement to his chaplain colleagues. Well, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation president and founder Mikey Weinstein demanded that Kim be, quote, officially, swiftly, aggressively, and visibly investigated and disciplined in punishment for his deplorable actions, end quote. He apparently thinks that Army chaplains are no longer allowed to do their jobs. So joining me now to talk about a House member letter sent to Secretary of Defense Mark Esper regarding religious liberty concerns in the military is Representative Doug Collins, who serves Georgia's 9th Congressional District. Representative, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always good to be here, sir. Hope you're well.
Well, I have to tell you, this was sort of the buildup of what we saw as an ongoing trend from this particular organization and this particular individual, because Chaplain Kim was not the only individual to be targeted by Mikey Weinstein and his organization. In fact, there were three of them, one at Fort Drum, two chaplains who decided to offer up a prayer on the Facebook page, encouraging their fellow service members during a time of need, encouraging them to visit Fort Drum's Labyrinth, part of the historic installation there with spiritual significance. Camp Moon, as we know, in South Korea, who distributed a PDF of his faith-based book from John Piper, two other chaplain colleagues, I might add. And then a Lieutenant Colonel David McGraw, who was in the Kelly Barracks in Stuttgart, Germany, who took the social distancing guidelines very seriously, was obedient and following those orders, and decided that he was going to perform Sunday Christian porch preaching on the balcony of his apartment building, which I think is brilliant and an excellent way to follow social distancing guidelines. In fact, it became very popular. So every one of these particular events, chaplains ministering to those in need, was targeted by this organization, and it sounds like you had basically had enough.
Oh, I've had enough of Mikey for a long time. This is not our first battle. I'm the only chaplain in the Congress on both House and Senate, and United States Air Force chaplain. I've been one for almost 19 years. He is an anathema to the military. He uses false arguments, innuendo, and basically at times if he needs, he resorts to outright lies to try and attack chaplains. Mm-hmm. He is not someone who wants the military to have chaplains. He is very anti-chaplain and anti, especially Christian chaplains. Frankly, it's just pathetic. And that's where but that's not new for him. He's been that way for a long time. And it's not just the Army. We've had results in the Air Force as well, where he brags about taking down videos. Look, there's no basis for what he is. The problem is we have a group. Number one, I want to know where the Army Chief of Chaplains is. Why is he not, why are they not out defending their chaplains? I haven't seen anything from this. And look, it's far past time. But we have a culture of basically mid-level officers who are more concerned about the baying of somebody like Mikey Weinstein on their career than they are about doing what the DOD protocols, Army protocols, and everything and the rule of law is. So people just need to know this attack is still going on. Mikey Weinstein is the leader of the pack when it comes to attacks on faith and religious freedom in the military. He is no more a defender of the constitutional right of religious freedom than I am, an astronaut. And so it's just ridiculous. But, look, he gets away with it because he's a loud barking dog. And
yes,
that's what happens, and people get scared, and they think, well, maybe he's right. No, he's not right. And we've got to have JAG Corps officers, we've got to have line officers who are willing to stand up and read their regulations and say, no, Mikey, this is not right. You cannot intimidate us anymore.
You know, I really liked the fact that you responded to his successes recently, because I think he's sort of garnered this veneer of verifiability, accuracy, and sort of constitutional rigor, when in fact the threat of these lawsuits, and there are many coming out of this particular organization, seem to be effective in getting people to bend the knee. And a 53-minute phone call with Colonel Condry, who was a commanding officer there at the base in Stuttgart, Germany, to me, I find absolutely amazing that he would dedicate that much time to an issue that is so clearly constitutionally appropriate. A chaplain who is providing chaplain services, and he is social distancing according to appropriate government guidelines. He stands there on the balcony of his private apartment building, and boy, Mikey seemed to have a real problem with that. But I think people think, okay, we're such a litigious society that we want to make sure we don't run afoul of anything, and he got the attention he wanted here.
Oh, that's he loves attention. If he can get his name print, if he can get his name, in TV, or if he can get it anywhere, that's what he wants, because that's why he goes out and he basically takes donors and says, look what I'm doing to protect constitutional liberties. And he's not. He's simply attacking freedom. The chaplain in Germany ought to get accommodation, not a reprimand.
Mm-hmm.
This is someone who adapts and overcomes and performs his job. Again, I mean, Mikey goes after the stuff, and this chaplain who forwarded a PDF book to other chaplains. Okay, we are the department. The chaplains are the ones who have to accommodate from every religious belief. We're all in our backgrounds and have things shared with each other all the time. He gets upset because one of the chaplains shares a book in a way that he says is proselytizing. No, he doesn't know the definition of proselytizing. He just knows what he likes just to get donors to believe. And I think that's the problem that we have here. And then we have a silent, seemingly chaplain corps. We have a silent JAG Corps. We have a silent PA who are just willing to roll over and say, well, I'd rather not have the fight. The Constitution is the very thing that you swear allegiance to. It is worth fighting for.
Yes,
religious
absolutely.
Liberties is not part of an asterisk on something else. it's very heart of who we are. The Constitution, yes, as the courts have said, the chaplain corps in the military is fundamental because of the protection of religious freedoms of all religions. A chaplain in the military will tell you, my job is to protect everyone's religious freedom, whether I agree with them or not. And for Mikey Weinstein to continually attack the chaplain corps, but for the sake of raising money and the sake of praying in the public eye, is frankly sickening.
Yes, I would agree. Well, I love the fact you talked about being a chaplain yourself. I think that's such a, gives you such a phenomenal point of reference here, an understanding of the importance of spiritual guidance during difficult times like battle. Talk to me a little bit about what these service members need right now when they are not only facing particular theaters of some active and some inactive warfare, but more importantly, having to deal with a pandemic, many of them overseas and away from their families. That's such an important role for chaplains now, isn't it?
Well, it's a role for no matter what the faith background of a chaplain is. The chaplain is there to support the service member, and they support the service member in freedom of religion and expression, and to make sure that they are there to support that constitutional right. And by doing so, it provides a, for some, it provides a comfort when they're away from home. It provides something that they can relate to. It provides a spiritual foundation that goes all the way back to the founding of our country. And chaplains, when doing their job properly, experience and help the needs of those who come before them. They use their particular, you know, training and tradition to help those in need, mm-hmm, of having a place where they can go and talk and know that it's not going to go to anybody else. That confidence, especially from my side in the Air Force, we have 100% confidentiality. You can come to me and talk about your boss. You can talk about your spouse. You can talk about the struggles that you're having, and you can say, how can I work these out, and know that it's not going anywhere. Those are, yes, the kind of things that a chaplain provides, and Mikey Weinstein just hates it because he, again, I go back to the fact, I used to think that it was an idea of constitutional authority. It's not with him. It's simply about raising money, getting his name in the paper, and attacking the chaplain corps.
Well, kudos to you and the other 19 Republicans who sent the letter to Secretary Esper requesting clarification once and for all to put an end to all of these complaints. I want to switch gears very quickly. We've got about 2 minutes left here. The CARES Act has been introduced in the House. It is a bloated $8 trillion, 1,800-page, typical Pelosi tax and spend dog and pony show. What are your problems with it? Let's talk about some of the inclusions and where you have concerns.
How about the whole thing?
It is.
It's just ridiculous. I would love to pick out many things like non-verification of Social Security numbers. Doing nationalization of elections. There's just so many things here. Let's just play this. I guess that Speaker Pelosi didn't have a good Christmas. She decides that she wants to come back in May and play Santa Claus and have the Democratic Party folks have their ornament and come hang it on the tree. That's all it is.
Oh, God bless you, Representative Collins, representing Georgia's 9th Congressional District. I love talking to you. Thank you for standing for what you stand for and for speaking for those who don't have a voice in the House. You speak for us. Coming up, a new survey shows 40% of Americans are more likely to consider homeschooling or online learning after the pandemic. If you're like our household, you are finding yourself in a scramble. So we'll talk to Senior Counsel and Director of Global Outreach at HSLDA, Mike Donnelly, about it right after this.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Friday, the 15th of May, 2020. As a reminder, you download the Stand Firm app. It will make your lives better and easier because with the touch of a button, you'll be able to find material, resources, broadcasts from past shows, and everything else you need to be fully informed to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture. Well, coronavirus has upended normal life for all of us. And for parents of school kids, we are navigating schooling at home, including online class time, self-directed schedules, work management, both with and for our kids. So maybe you won't be surprised to hear that a new survey shows 40% of Americans are now more likely to consider homeschooling or online learning after the pandemic ends. Joining me now to talk about it is Senior Counsel and Director of Global Outreach at HSLDA, Mike Donnelly. Mike, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Sarah. Great to be with you today.
First, I want to distinguish between homeschooling and schooling at home, because a lot of people believe these are parents of children in a traditional academic environment, that they are homeschooling. But in fact, we are actually referring to this as schooling at home. They're not exactly the same. Can you make the distinction for us?
You bet. They're definitely not the same. Although homeschoolers may have a lot more experience being at home with their kids a lot more than, you know, parents who send their kids to private or public school, nobody's really doing normal homeschooling right now. We're all locked in our homes, and that's not typical. You know, homeschoolers, contrary to what some people say about homeschoolers, we do get out of the house quite a bit. We like to get out and get together with our friends, do sports activities, social activities, and nobody can do that right now. We're all stuck at home. And so, the hallmark of homeschooling, though, is the flexibility, the parent direction that's possible, and including a lot of the outside activities. So we're all looking forward to things loosening up a bit so we can get back to normal.
You know, I think this pandemic has really become what a colleague once described to me as a transformative event. This really is sort of a way to re-examine the traditional educational model, and it has forced parents who might not have ordinarily considered non-traditional approaches to education to really sit back and take stock of what it is their children are learning and how exactly they are performing in their school. I know for our part, My children are in one of the best public school programs in the state, if not the Mid-Atlantic. It's nationally ranked. But I have always been a very dutiful, aggressive parent, right? So I'm the one you don't want to get the email or the phone call from because I'm the regular complainer. And my kids are very vocal about their beliefs. They will speak up in class. But I will tell you, the functionality of being able to do this at home has actually given us some pause. Are you guys there at HSLDA getting more inquiries during this time about how exactly this can be done?
We are getting a lot of inquiries, sir. We are helping many families make the switch from, doing what you're doing with trying to manage multiple children with Google Chromebooks and online Zoom meetings and while you're trying to work. There's lots of people who are saying, you know what, this is too complicated. And with schools saying that, you know, they're going to continue that and maybe add some additional complications like half days and day on, day off, mm-hmm. and add to that the, mandatory sanitizing every 30 seconds. And I mean, you've seen the pictures out of France where they've painted these chalk squares for these little 5-year-olds to stay in during recess. Or you may have heard about the English Teachers Union saying, you know what, before these kids come into school, we're going to have to spray them with disinfectant. I don't think parents are too keen on that kind of experience. And so I think whether it's health driven because they're concerned that their child might get the virus or might get something, or because it's going to be too complicated, the numbers are stunning. Three polls are showing that between 15% and 40% of people may make the switch, just like you're thinking about, to homeschooling. We're seeing that now. And if you just run those numbers, you are looking at potentially a 500% increase in the number of people homeschooling in the fall, which could top 10 million kids.
Wow. Wow. And that actually presents sort of an interesting corollary here, because these are 55 million students who are no longer in a traditional setting. And we're spending $800 billion a year on K-12 education. You know, I think we thought, as did some other families, that, you know, American education was going to get out ahead of this, that we saw it coming and we should have been prepared. And I think what we're realizing is that we really weren't. What interests me, I think, as part of this breakdown, is that Democrats identified more often that they were likely to homeschool than Republicans. 45.7% of Democrats to 42% of Republicans. I think we always think of this as a traditionally conservative model. Does something like that surprise you?
I'm not sure if it surprises me. Maybe it does a little bit. But, what we've seen at HSLDA over the decades, we've been serving 80,000 member families over 40 years, helping them pick curriculum, figure out how to homeschool their kids, whether they have kids with special learning needs or going through high school, or helping them walk through the challenges of withdrawing from the school. What we've found over the years is that the homeschooling movement has diversified broadly. It's diversifying across income, ethnicity, philosophical, religious beliefs. I mean, you are seeing transformation happening, and this coronavirus, it seems like, is accelerating that. And, you know, we're excited about that. I know that people are struggling. There are people struggling for a lot of reasons right now, the economic stuff. But, you know, this is a time when families can come together and become families. And I'm seeing that even with my own homeschool family. We're together a lot more than we ever have been. I mean, homeschooling families, people think, you know, just stay home. That is not true. We're as busy, maybe busier sometimes than others, and I've enjoyed the slower pace, even though I feel badly for the people who are, you know, really, really struggling with this economic impact.
Well, and I would say, you know, that's interesting because, again, the distinction between schooling at home versus homeschooling, I had a completely different perspective, not understanding really that the involvement of co-ops and outdoor activities and guided tours through things like museums or aquariums as part of sort of an expanded three-dimensional learning really was part of the homeschool platform. So for those of you listening who are interested, I encourage you to visit the HSLDA website. Mike Donnelly has been the guest today. Always great to have him on. We're going to get an update on the coronavirus lockdown situation on the ground in North Carolina and an upcoming event from Trail Life USA from entrepreneur and activist David Benham of the Benham Brothers right after this. We'll be right back.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony on this Friday afternoon. Follow us on Twitter at FRCDC, me at Sarah P. Perry, or Tony at T. Perkins. And a reminder, get that Stand Firm app in the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. Well, weeks ago, David Benham was arrested for providing sidewalk counseling at an abortion clinic. Though he and other peaceful protesters were following all government-mandated social distancing guidelines. But in addition to that, there are some churches who have taken issue with Governor Roy Cooper's refusal to allow parishioners to worship within their church homes. He's also going to talk to me a little bit about an event he's going to be emceeing tomorrow, the 16th. David Benham, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on.
Well, let me ask you first where things stand, because you actually, as a sidewalk minister, somebody who decided with other peaceful protesters that you would pray and speak with those who were entering an abortion clinic, you guys actually got in trouble with the police. And now you are, with the help of ADF, turning around and suing the city of Charlotte. Tell us a little bit about where that stands.
Well, the city of Charlotte is backing off. The police department is backing off, at least technically in the streets, but strategically in terms of their position from a legal standpoint, they're not backing off at all. And so the Alliance Defending Freedom is pushing that for us, and we're not going to back down. They clearly crossed the line. They knew it was an unlawful arrest. The officer that arrested me couldn't even look me in the eyes. He knew he was doing the wrong thing. You know, and not only were we honoring COVID social distancing laws, we don't have to do that because we're a federally recognized 501c3 public charity. We're an essential organization. ABC liquor stores don't exercise social distancing laws. People are piled into those places.
Oh, I bet.
And the abortion facility that morning, the people are piled into the waiting room. No masks. They weren't social distanced at all. But we had three peaceful sidewalk counselors with hand sanitizer. We had put sidewalk chalk on the sidewalk to make sure that we stood at a distance, and yet we were the ones that were arrested. And so, you know, we are absolutely not going to back down, and I'm excited about where this is going to go because I care about my country.
Yes.
I care about not only the unborn and these mothers that need help, but I care about our freedom and our rights, and we're not going to let this governor and our liberal elected leaders, which, by the way, elections have consequences.
Yes,
we're not
going
to let these leaders use the COVID crisis to push us underneath a bushel.
What a great word. And I have to tell you, there are so many of us who believe at a certain point you pass over from public safety into totalitarianism. And in fact, and I was speaking with Representative Collins about this earlier today, is there ever a more important, more necessary, more needed time to pray with others and to gather together than during this period of time in American history? And those people who are going in to get an abortion, an opportunity to pray with people like you, David, what a tremendous impact you have on those individuals' lives. So praise God for ADF and your consistency and your willingness to move forward with this. And the churches
praise God now,
we know as well that churches have sued the governor, Roy Cooper, again, as part of a Return America coalition led by some pastors and educators down there. They had a rally a few days ago down in Raleigh to rally against basically the stay-at-home order because they want in. They want back in to their church bodies. They've done the online worship services. They've done the outdoor worship services, but they want in. So tell me about where that is right now.
Well, I mean, we're looking at the data. I mean, we're not controlled by these supposed medical experts. However, we do want to pay attention. We want to be responsible. We're rational people. We're looking at the flatlining. We're not in a COVID crisis in terms of North Carolina ourselves. Now, you've got an issue in New York City and some of these other highly populated densities, but you don't have that here. And these pastors are using logic. They're being very responsible, and they're even saying, look, we're going to socially distance. We're going to alter our services. We're not saying everybody come in and start hugging and all this. Look, what we don't want is now somehow the governor to be dictating what our religious liberties are or aren't, especially when we are starting to see some of the scientific data and the research that's coming out clearly showing that not only are we flattening out, but we're starting to drop down in terms of our reported cases. So as long as we're socially responsible, we should be meeting.
All right, I want to talk about the event that you are emceeing tomorrow. Trail Life USA, a group that we love, a Christian scouting program for boys that's got over 800 troops nationally, is hosting a family movie night for lockdown weary families, of which we are one. So raise his hand. You're going to emcee. Tell me a little bit about this program.
Yeah, well, they reached out to me, and I love Trail Life USA, by the way. When the Boy Scouts turned to Scouts USA and began to promote the radical sexual revolution, it was a shame. My heart was broken. But then all of a sudden on the horizon, here comes Trail Life USA, all about, and it's a Christ-centered organization that allows boys to transition from boyhood to manhood. And listen, I'm a parent. I got three boys, two girls, and I need all the help I can get, and Trail Life is here to help. With a great movie night with Pilgrim's Progress tomorrow night.
If they want to register, David, tell us quickly where they should go.
TrailLifeUSA.com/backyard.
Backyard. I love it. Thanks for being with us, David Benham. We are going to switch gears. We're going to continue discussions about kids and education, and we're going to take a look at the socialist agenda behind the New York Times 1619 Project. Is it everything it is made out to be? Senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, Mike Gonzalez, and author of an upcoming book, The Plot to Change America, joins me next on Washington Watch. Stay with us.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I cannot wait to talk about what we are going to discuss next, because when it came out, I don't think I was fully aware of some of the problematic inclusions in this particular program. If any of you watch the Oscars, if you can stomach the politics that come out of Tinseltown, and you can get yourself past the acceptance speeches that are rife with politicking under the shining lights, you would have seen an ad for something called the 1619 Project. And doing a little research, I discovered that this was an offering for the New York Times. Well, the New York Times has just won, or rather its author of the essay that launched the program, Nicole Hannah-Jones, has just won a Pulitzer Prize for this program. But for a lot of critics, that gives the program the pastiche of accuracy, even though it's got an incredibly skewed worldview and is rife with historical inaccuracy. Particularly problematic is that the project, headed to a public school near you, projects an overtly socialist viewpoint and is practically guaranteed to increase that kind of teaching in the U.S. So joining me now to break it down is senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation and author of the upcoming book, The Plot to Change America, How Identity Politics is Dividing the Land of the Free, Mike Gonzalez. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Sarah, it's such a joy to be with you. Thank you very much for having me on to discuss.
You're so welcome. Well, I've got to tell you, it's hard to know where to start with this platform, because the notion of this, and let's take first the name, the 1619 date is originating here from the year in which African slaves were first brought to the English colonies in North America. So really what it does is it pits 1619 against 1776, what many of us would consider the birthday for America. So that's where the platform starts. It has now been neatly packaged into a curriculum that is going to be shipped out to public classrooms, ready for indoctrination to a public school near you. But of all of the criticisms that I've seen and read on this platform, Mike, what is your biggest problem with the project?
Well, you know, Edmund Burke, who was, you know, leading, the person who invented modern conservatism, said that in order to love your country, the country had to be lovely. And what this project does with this curriculum, my main beef is the fact that it's a curriculum. I really don't care what readers of the New York Times But people who line up to buy the New York Times, that's more, you know, whatever. It's a private company. They're private citizens. We have freedom of speech. My main beef is that this is a curriculum that is being taught to students, to young minds, to get them from very early on to think of America as hideous, to see America as a place whose true birth was the day that we began slavery, not 1776, not the ideals of 1776, the ideals which the author of the 1619 Project, Nicole Hannah-Jones, says were false. Let's not quibble with the fact that ideals cannot be false, right? They can be bad or good.
Right.
Ideals can never be false. But the thing is, let's take the main two ideals, right? That all men are created equal, and that we're all equal under God, and that we have we have the right to rule ourselves. That is what got us out of slavery. That is these ideals, the ideals of the Declaration, the ideals of the Constitution, is what got this country out of slavery. That all men are created equal, that were endowed by creators with inalienable rights. So to pretend that the stain of slavery, which it was a stain, and nobody is denying that slavery was tragic for everybody, but especially for the slaves themselves. Nobody pretends that we should learn about slavery. We should also learn that it was our ideals that got us out of slavery, when endowed by creators with inalienable rights, and we're all equal under the law. When we finally say, okay, we're going to fight a war to make sure that these ideals apply to everybody, and then we had the civil rights movement to make sure that we get rid of segregation as well. So, and don't forget, when Martin Luther King goes to the mall in 63, he says, I come here to cash a check. That check with these ideals. He believed in the ideals. To teach our children that these ideals were false, that something else, as the project pretends, that the war, the Revolutionary War, was fought to protect slavery because England was going to get rid of slavery, that is a falsehood that the New York Times has since had to retract.
Yes. And yet, still won a Pulitzer. So you can give an award to anyone for anything, apparently. I've got to tell you, Mike, you come to this with such a personal knowledge of why it will boost socialist teaching, because what it really does is take that notion of American exceptionalism. And we hear a lot about this now because the entirety of the Trump campaign was a slogan of Make America Great Again. That was sort of the linchpin. It's how we understood he was going to run his campaign. And there is an underpinning of American exceptionalism in that. But exceptionalism in America is now sort of a type of modern philosophical heresy, isn't it? This is the notion of, well, our nation is not worth celebrating as being unique and beautiful and strong.
And that is right. And that is, why are we exceptional? We're exceptional not because we're better, although I believe that we're better, but that is not what exceptionalism claims. Exceptionalism claims that we're the only country on earth that derives its legitimacy from natural right. Natural right has the same thing as human rights. Natural rights are very few. You know, we have the right to liberty, the right to freedom of speech, the right to free conscience, in other words, choose our religion. You know, the right to property, all these things are individual rights. That is what exceptionalism means. What identity politics does, and this 1619 project and now a curriculum, is that it takes us away from that exceptionalism, that idea that it is individuals that are endowed by the creator with these rights, and speaks of collectivism, so and collective and group rights. So when Nicole Hannah-Jones says, as she did last year in an interview, that she thinks that communist Cuba produces the greatest racial equity, and it's because communist Cuba is socialist. She says the reason is because it's socialism. So she believes that socialism is the best pathway to racial equity. First of all, anybody who knows anything about Cuba understands that that is not the case.
Right.
A country that is majority black or mixed race today is run by a very small white minority, actually a family. So that is not that is untrue. But let's not go down that rabbit hole. Socialism will not produce the best, the best path forward to racial equity, obviously. is individual right is treating people as individuals, not as members of collectives.
You know, it's interesting because you, and you mentioned this in your article as well, her reference to Cuba as being the penultimate example of sort of an equal relationship, an equality-based governance model, which for those of us who are old enough to know better, and we've talked about this in a different context, Mike, how there's this strange appeal of socialism as a notion that is a viable political option or a system of governance when, in fact, it is anything but. And socialist economies have failed worldwide, except for the Netherlands, which, if you want to get very finite about it, its economy is really more free market than a true socialist environment. So we'll leave that.
Yeah, they respect private property. Right?
Absolutely. So we'll leave that aside for the moment. But socialism universally fails. We have textbooks full of history that demonstrates it. And yet what this platform does, because it's already been instituted in 4,500 classrooms in just a few months. And as the parent of three school-aged children, this is where I take the largest umbrage. I am very upset about the fact that not only is it the notion that the character of America is irredeemable, that the nation itself, right, the founding was so ugly that there can be nothing redeemable about the democratic system of governance, but it's historically accurate and it is based on a notion of a governance system that fails. So it is more problematic, I think, than anyone reading the New York Times and seeing a Pulitzer Prize winning essay would automatically understand unless they did a little homework like you have in this piece.
Yeah, so again, it's not the fact that it's a series of articles. It's the fact that it's a curriculum, right? It's the fact that it's now being taught to tens of thousands of students.
Yes.
That it is in 4,500 classrooms, that it has been, it's the school systems of Buffalo, Chicago, Washington, Wilmington, in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, have all adopted the project on a broad scale. That is very worrisome.
Yes.
And, and this idea, so identity politics is tight at the hip with socialism, I believe.
Yes.
One of the reasons I titled my book, The Plot to Change America, is because I came to the conclusion that what it was subterfuge, was a pathway to introduce central planning in this country. Because if you say, as you said just now, if you believe that the country is irredeemably racist, that the country is structurally racist, that it is institutionally racist, so you have to replace the institutions, you have to replace the structures. And their alternatives are not the ideals that we have of individuals being able to govern themselves and their families, and governments being instituted to protect their freedoms. No, their ideals is really more central planning, is we're going to have a collectivist group-based approach, not individual-based approach, and we're going to have the government as the arbiter of when groups have, disagreements, the government will arbiter these disagreements. It's everything that is foreign to the American mind and to the American tradition, to the American ideals.
You know, I find it interesting also, we're talking about socialism and we're talking about how this is really designed to boost the notion, the acceptability, the prevalence of socialism in young minds in America. And even the World Socialist website has critiqued the actual 1619 project. They have said they've offered blistering rejoinders, a racialist falsification of America and history. So even the socialists say, no, this is wrong in so many ways. But my concern, again, as it is yours, it's being packaged and platformed now with a Pulitzer attached. It's being sold to schools nationwide. 4,500 schools have already implemented. Do we have a sense of how rapidly this is spreading, how quickly a platform like this, a curricula like this, will be instituted?
Well, in January, the classrooms was in 3,500 classrooms. So it has added 1,000 classrooms in the space of 3 months. But let me tell you why the socialists have attacked this project. The socialists, the old-line socialists, are believe in economic classes. In other words, they're colorblind. They believe that the working class was going to rise up and overthrow the landlords and the bourgeoisie, and that it was going to be a colorless, a colorblind eruption of revolution. The other, the cultural Marxists, the people of identity politics, have given up on that idea. Okay, so they believe in group identities based on race, ethnicity, sex, sexual orientation, gender, even disability status, not economic classes. So that is the big, you have to understand this big fight at the heart of the Marxists in America today and of the world. Some of them are economic Marxists. They believe that somebody like Oprah Winfrey, for example, is no different from a wealthy woman of any color, right? It's money and social class that matters to the old line socialists. To the cultural Marxists, everything is down to immutable traits like race, gender, race, sex, ethnicity, and so forth.
And you also have a connection that you've made to the fact that socialism as a philosophy is actually more akin to socialism itself. It is akin to slavery itself, because there is this notion of lack of remuneration and coercion and forced acquiescence, as opposed to capitalism or democracy, which operates free of coercion, right? Open trade, right. Open arrangements, lack of forcible impulse on someone to do something that they don't want to do. Again, part of what makes America great. So do we know how many schools we'll eventually see this in? It's important for individuals like you and I, particularly for parents. Parents, if you are listening, not only should you do your homework on the 1619 Project, but also you need to find out what your children are being taught in their world history classes, because as we know recently, only 25% of American eighth graders are competent in civics and in geography. So among other problems, we have a lack of information, not just the wrong information. So what's the cure to stem this tide in the minute that we have left? Big question, Mike, but what do we need to do?
So the very second essay in this project is by Matthew Desmond, and it declares, quote, "If you want to understand the brutality of American capitalism, you have to start on the plantation," unquote. That is completely false. Capitalism is based, free markets are based on people, individuals, adults, you know, establishing contracts free of coercion, right? You and I, if I want to sell you something, we agree on the right price, I benefit, you benefit. Socialism, the first thing it does is takes your property away. It is property that gives you the wherewithal to be free. So if anything is akin to slavery, it is socialism.
Mike Gonzalez, who's senior fellow at Heritage Foundation, with the book coming out, The Plot to Change America. I love talking to smart people. Wasn't that an education? Stay with us. Next week, we'll have a brand new edition of Washington Watch. We'll pray for you and see you then.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.